Oh my God. It's 1:40 in the morning on Wednesday night before the podcast goes up, and it's been a hell of a week. It's been a hell of a week. I'm not gonna lie to you. I've been working really hard to get this TikTok album ready. I don't know if you saw, I've been posting a lot about it on social media. I bet all the podcast listeners are aware, but maybe you're not. Volume 3 of the TikTok songs. Now that's what I call a bunch of Austin Archer's TikTok songs compiled into an album. Volume 3 is coming out this Friday, February 4th, 2022 on Bandcamp. Doing the Bandcamp exclusive release. No Spotify, no Apple Music. That's not because I'm trying to stand in solidarity with Neil Young or anything like that. It's not that I don't support what Neil Young's trying to do, you know, standing up for good information and standing against misinformation. It's just that it's Bandcamp Friday, and I'm trying to release it on Bandcamp so I can make some money, you know? Sue me. I'm trying to get a little bit paid, okay? But it's been a hell of a, I, man, I kind of hurriedly threw this together. I was like, you know what? I have like four more songs or four or five more songs that I want to do before I can have another album ready. And I decided like 2 weeks ago, I was like, I'm gonna do it. I'm just gonna like grind them out real quick. And the over this weekend and through the beginning of this week, it's been busy making all the content to advertise this. It's been busy. And anyway, that's why this intro is not gonna be great, because I haven't had time to do it. I haven't had time to sit down and make it nice. But that's also what we're talking about today. I'm talking to my friend Eve, who is a content creator like me, who does this, who works in the social media space, who makes videos. She's very funny. She's very talented. She's a singer-songwriter, musician, and a maker of funny and entertaining and good videos. And we're talking about sort of the frustrations of and the embarrassment of and the ups and downs of self-promotion on social media, the process of having to be you know, your own PR team, and having to, like, what that process is like, figuring that out. And that's what we're talking about today. So it fits that that's sort of what I've been spending my week doing, is trying to let people know about this thing that I'm releasing on Friday, February 4th, on Bandcamp. Tell your friends and your family and everybody that you know. But yeah, Eve is great, and I'm so glad that I finally got her on the show. I've been asking her to do the podcast for a while so that we could talk about this, and we finally did. I'm so tired. I shot a commercial all day long today, and I got done and I made another video to promote the album some more, and oh man, I'm just so tired. I need to go to bed. So I'm gonna record the outro really quick, but here's the episode. I want to say more nice things about Eve. I'll say more nice things in the outro, but just know that I was very excited to talk to Eve. I thought this conversation went well. I thought she did great. You should follow Eve Parker Finley on TikTok or Instagram. But yeah, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser, and I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my new internet friend, Eve Parker Finley, about self-promotion on the internet. Hi, Eve.
Hi, what's up?
How are you?
I'm so great, sort of fine.
You having a decent day? You've been awake a little longer than me, I assume.
Honestly, probably not. I'm a real night owl. Like, COVID era really made me someone who, like, was going to bed at 3 a.m. and waking up at 12 pretty regularly. So I kind of just woke up, but.
Okay. Do you work late into the night? Do you work on music late in the night? Because I do that.
Yeah, I do. And I often find my, like, idea brain for content creation activates at, like, midnight. So from, like, midnight to 2:30, I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna, like,
I think that's
do a
such
bunch of
bullshit.
things.
I hate that. I'm like trying to go to bed. No, I'm not saying
Oh,
that you're
yeah.
lying. I'm saying it's bullshit that that happens. I'm like trying to go to bed and that's when I'm like, oh wait, but right now I could write a symphony. Like right now, it's coming out. Yeah. Like right now I've got the ideas and I'm like, why? Why though? I'm trying to be a normal adult human who wakes up at when the sun comes up or shortly thereafter and have a full productive day. But it's like I sit around for the first 3, 4, 5 hours that I'm awake and slug through my life. And like I post in the morning. So that's like a work thing that I get to do. Like I wake up and that's, but everything's made the day before.
I do that too.
And then I wake up and like post it and I like monitor like how sleepily. It's doing sleepily, like check on how it's doing and like however, you know, go back and forth between the different platforms. Like let's see what YouTube's doing and let's see what, you know, but like that's like an easy morning task. And then, you know, then I get up and try to stretch and meditate and eat breakfast, which I should do those in the opposite order if I'm trying to be healthy. But yeah, it's like I don't really start kicking into a creative groove till later in the day. And really, man, if I am like cooking late at night, like 10 p.m., 11 p.m., I can roll into 2 a.m., 3 a.m., you know, easy, you know. So
you're cooking, you got to finish the meal.
Yeah. It's bullshit. It's bullshit, Eve. I don't like it. This is the first time that we've spoken to each other, I think.
I know.
Yeah.
That's true, even though it doesn't, I don't think it feels like that.
It doesn't feel like that. parasocial relationships are weird and being on the internet is weird. I feel like in the last 2 years, I don't know if you feel like this, but like, I feel like I've gotten all of these friends who are all over the place and I feel like I know them. I see them every day. I chat with them regularly in the comments or in DMs, but like, we don't know each other. Like we've never, but it's weird. I never used to have internet friends and now I have, so many. I don't even know when I started following you, but I feel like you've been around for a while in my sphere of internet
in
friends.
In the ether.
Yeah.
I love the concept of internet friends, especially in this last year and a half where like IRL acquaintances were the thing that like disappeared first. You know, those people that you would like see at events or gatherings and things and like have a sort of small but real relationship with. And I feel like these kinds of relationships kind of replace that for me in some ways.
No,
it's
totally.
It's very different. It's very unique.
Totally. So many of us lost the fullness of our IRL interactions. I still see people from time to time, but everything's like much, everything's pared down. Everything's much simpler. Mm-hmm. When people have a party, it's not 50 to 100 people that show up. It's like 5 to 10 people that show up. And that's like the gathering. And maybe that's partially getting older. And maybe that's also, I think it's a mixture of the two of getting older and COVID. But like my social circle has become people online and it's cool. Because everyone's everywhere. Like everyone, like you're in Canada and I have a few friends in Canada now and I have friends in Australia and I have friends in the UK and I have, you know, and people are all over the place and it's cool, you know?
I love that.
Yeah. How did you, let's talk a little bit about how did you get into content creation and whatnot? Was it something that you was like an aim for you as a songwriter and as a comedian? Were you like, ooh, this is a good angle? Or did you just sort of accidentally stumble into it like I did and go, oh, I guess this could work?
Honestly, I'm like a weird mixture of both because I downloaded TikTok, I think like a lot of other millennials, on like March 15th, 2020.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was alone and needed something to entertain myself. And I spent hours just like scrolling and looking. And I feel like I came across this genre of comedy, especially that I thought was so entertaining and silly and irreverent and interesting. and so like a few months into the pandemic, I was like, I can try that. I want to try that.
Yeah.
So then, and then I did, and then it just like snowballed from there. It's kind of strange because before that, I mean, I've been like a musician very in a DIY community vibe for like years, almost a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And I started taking seriously trying to promote my own project, I would say at like the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. And part of that was making a decision to be like, okay, social media is a part of like growing my reach to like, you know, reach people with my creations and my music.
Yeah.
But when I first joined TikTok, it like really wasn't about that for me. It really was about like, I need just a like creative outlet. And
well, and didn't
I think I'm like,
no, keep going. Sorry.
Just that I'm like, we could pick up on this later, but I'm actually so bad at promoting music through TikTok and social media. And I find it so hard.
Oh yeah.
For a bunch of reasons we can talk about.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get into that. We're gonna like, that's gonna be the meat of the conversation. But like, was your experience early on TikTok, because you just said that early on, like, it wasn't immediately about how can I market or promote my project. I felt like, and I don't know if this is just something that changes as your audience grows or what, but I felt like early on what I was getting was like a real sense of community. Like early on, TikTok seemed like this rare, weird place. And maybe it's just this like pure thing that can happen before something really becomes an established place on the internet. It was newer and it was exciting, and people see, and I still see this, but early on it really felt like the vibe on TikTok was like only positive, was like anytime you post.
When is this, when are you talking about?
Like early on in the pandemic when everyone was downloading it,
right?
Was your experience with that the same, that it felt like everyone was there to like uplift each other and to be like cheering each other on and to be like, this is great, I love this? People were sharing, commenting, and the comments were all very positive. I don't know if that's just my subjective experience, that I was like, oh, this place is so warm and kind, and that as my audience grew, in came the people who were like, you suck, you're ugly, you're bad at music, you're you know, and like it became the internet. But I don't,
yeah,
did you experience something similar to that?
That's interesting. I like haven't like noted it like that, but now that you say it, I'm thinking about how I do feel like the content that I see and the comments that I read and the like general vibe definitely has changed. I thought it was how I've like accidentally curated my For You page.
Sure.
But I do think there's something to be said about like, I wonder if peak TikTok was really during the pandemic when most of the world was in a lockdown of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Because people were like at home and like trying to entertain themselves through such a difficult time. And it's not like we're not in a difficult time anymore, but it's not the same kind of like, you know, most people being at home. Because I do find that during that first year or first like 8 months, it was so fun. And so I feel like so much of what I saw was so funny.
Exactly.
And I don't think a lot of what I see now is like funny.
Well, I'm like wondering, like, did I do that? Did I curate my page to be more politically charged? And I mean, obviously I make politically charged content. I think that like both of us like aren't afraid of commenting on issues that we find important, or like lending our voice to certain things, lending our platform to things that we think are important or deserving of some attention. And I don't know if I curated my For You page to now be mostly people like sharing stuff that's like really disappointing or like a bummer. Like,
is that what your For You page is?
Right now, like, I feel like I open it up and it's like, like I still get funny stuff. I still see funny things. I still see like fun songs and stuff. But like I see a lot of like first thing in the morning, I open it up and TikTok has become another place to doom scroll, where it's just like, everyone's like, here's all the things that are wrong in the world right now. And here's what this person said that's awful, and here's why we should go and burn their house down. And I'm like, you know, and I'm kind of like, oh, geez. Like, and it's weird because I also participate as a content creator in that space to a degree. And I understand the value of like making sure that we're holding people accountable and shining light on important issues and stuff. So it's not that I don't like that stuff. And it's not that I want to just live in a world with rose colored glasses where all I see is fun and happy. And,
right.
But I think that you're right, that it might've been just that pandemic moment where we collectively needed a little bit of somewhere to be that was a little friendlier and a little like that felt nice and safe, because we were all kind of freaking out and
joyful.
Kind of, and joyful. And I mean, we were all sort of doing things together, like, you know, making jigsaw puzzles or like whatever the trends were that everyone was doing. And then TikTok was this thing that sort of happened that was like everyone started getting on TikTok and doing trends, and I think that it maybe that was part of it, was that it was just like the world was burning and we needed a place to be a little happier. And I mean, it's weird because it's like, it's not like the fire's out, like the fire's still raging. And maybe it's just that TikTok has become more established and we're a little bit more used to the pandemic world. So we're getting back to our regular conversations.
Yeah. But I do wonder if something has changed in the algorithm and if there are more like, I don't know if I should say like nefarious actors. Something really bizarre that I've noticed, for example, you've heard about the truck convoy in Canada?
No. Tell me about it.
The Freedom Convoy.
Oh my God, what is it?
It's this protest that's going on where this convoy of truckers are like driving to Ottawa to like block traffic in protests of like vaccine and COVID mandates.
Yep.
It's like, you know, there's all these layers to it, whatever. But what's weird to me is that I have gotten so many TikTok lives in my For You page that are people at the trucker protests.
Weird.
It is so weird. And like, I try to actively, and I don't know when this happened, like in the last month or two, where TikTok is like suggesting, I can tell that it's starting to suggest things that for me to like hate watch, for me to get angry about. And this is one of them. And I like try to like avoid and like not watch it because I've like tried to curate my feed to not be that. I don't want this to be like Facebook circa 2013.
Yes.
I want it to be a like entertaining micro YouTube on speed.
I love that description of TikTok, an entertaining micro YouTube on speed. That's really good. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. The algorithm knows that you engage with stuff that you hate watch. It knows that it can get you to jump in there and get in the comments and get involved and maybe even make a response video or like, you know, so that stuff was showing up a lot on my For You page early on when I first started doing political content. And now somehow the algorithm has figured out that like, I don't want to see them. I want to see the people responding to them. And that's what I engage with more. So I think you can train it. I do think that like it's healthy or it feels healthier for my brain to try to just think of the algorithm as like a robot that doesn't have human emotions or like agendas.
Totally.
And but then it is weird because sometimes it really, really feels like it is pushing some kind of it does have political leanings. Yeah. And you have to think like, well, a person is behind this, or a team of people are behind this, because trying to find any kind of internal consistency with the algorithm can be maddening. Trying to figure out,
yeah,
like, oh, this kind of content never works, no matter who's doing it, or this kind of messaging never works. But anytime you try to find that, you can always find exceptions and be like, but why is this allowed then? I don't understand why. Because you'll see people who are like the kind of people that would be at that truck rally, people who might not be hard to find on their page racist or xenophobic or homophobic or transphobic content, and like, you know, and you'll see from time to time those creators lose their platforms and like get banned, and you're like, okay so these people can be deplatformed, and there seems to be some kind of internal monitoring process where like, you know, everyone can be reported, anyone can be reported for any reason and have your content taken down without it being reviewed, and then you can submit an appeal and hopefully get it reviewed and have them see that it was you know, erroneously reported or whatever. But at the same time, it's like, there's a lot of stuff that just flies and that doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I've reported stuff in the past that was like objectively, clearly racist. And mm-hmm. and TikTok got back to me and was like, we reviewed the content and we didn't find any.
We don't think so.
And I just was like, oh, I was like, that's but it's so clearly racist. Like, I was like, it's like the yeah. most racist, you know?
Yeah.
It's like someone like making like a lynching joke or something. And I'm like, oh, that's yeah. I mean, I don't know how else to. Like, what are you talking about? Did you review it?
But so, if that doesn't count, then what does?
Right. Yeah. And that brings up a whole other can of worms, which is like, do we even want the reporting process to be a thing? Because is it even mm-hmm. something that can be relied on? Because like I said, if anyone can report anything for any reason, does TikTok really have the personnel on hand on their payroll to really do an actual review of all of that stuff? And then you're still in the subjective analysis of whoever those people are that are doing the review and whatever their personal mm-hmm. politics are. And so it's like, at the end of the day, like, do we want that to be the process by which we vote out certain forms of content? Or do we want to like do it ourselves and be like, we're going right. to handle making sure people know that this person is spreading dangerous information, or you know, I don't know, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I always worry about, like, in the history of all social media platforms, with the rise of any kind of reporting censorship structure, it's, to me, it doesn't worry me that some people lose. Well, the way that it worries me is that it always ends up punishing marginalized creators in some way
right.
for doing things that are not what the original ask for those protections are for.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about like Tumblr when they introduced the quote unquote like adult ban mm-hmm. on content that was like pornographic or whatever. And it ended up pushing like all of these queer and creators of color and all these people off the platform. All of a sudden they lost their pages. And I don't know. I think that's always been the death of any social media platform, really. So I don't know what the solution is, because I do come across content that is so like, I don't know. I'm older now, but I'm like, who's the isolated 16-year-old coming across this kind of stuff, and like, how is it influencing them? I don't know. I can't help
totally
worry about that kind of
totally
stuff.
I see that stuff all the time, and I'm like, I know, especially when I see that it's popular, like when I see that mm-hmm. that a person's got a big following and they've got, I'm like, oh, this is dangerous though, even if it's yeah. just a person who's just very popularly spreading misinformation about vaccines or about like
all the conspiracy TikTok yeah. is so scary to me, because it's like it's so like it uses video and words and like all these like manipulation techniques to like influence people to believe the like wackiest stuff. Like, do you remember the Wayfair controversy of
yes that everyone thought that Wayfair was selling children, and
yeah which is a QAnon like conspiracy, and but like TikTok teens were believing it because the things that people were making about it went viral. And it's just, to me, that is like a terrifying aspect of the platform.
Totally. And it's hard to know what we want the solution to be, because as a person who regularly gets content taken down and banned because mm-hmm. someone reports it, because I pick fights with people and I definitely invite dissenting opinions into my space, because I'm like taking a stance on things, and I think you know what that's like too. I don't want to be like, when it happens, I don't want to be like too much of a victim about it, because I'm kind of like, hey, mm-hmm. look, I'm the one who's setting the stage for this. I'm the one who's like, I'm saying this stuff publicly. But also like, it's hard, because I'm sitting here going, a lot of times all I'm doing is like pointing at someone else and being like, hey, what that person said is really, really misogynistic and dangerous. And then I'll get taken down for like bullying that person. And I'm like, I don't know how that works. And
yeah.
And, And it's not just me that this happens. Obviously, this is a big problem on TikTok. And you're so right to say that these kind of measures tend to affect marginalized communities worse. And almost the more layers of marginalization that you add to your identity, the worse it gets. Not just with these measures, but the worse your comment section is, the worse kind of DMs you get, the worse, like the more layers of marginalization that you add to your identity, it just emboldens a certain kind of person all the more to be that much more vitriolic and gross to you. And like I'm a straight white cisgender guy, and like the worst that they can do to me is like make fun of my mustache and be like, you look like a pedophile, and like, you know, like say stuff like that, where I'm like, they don't have a whole lot, but it also they always show their colors by like they're gonna go for the worst thing that they can say, they're gonna go for the ugliest. But the more layers of marginalization that you add, the uglier people can get. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know, like, obviously, like, it would be great if we could live in a world where we could somehow, hold on, sorry.
No problem.
I got a, someone called me, I'm zooming on my phone and I got a phone call. Somehow, if we could live in a world where we could identify all the quote-unquote bad people who have the bad ideas and we could get them off the internet and only keep... But I'm like, is that even a reasonable thing to expect? Or is the reality that we... That if we want a place to freely share ideas and information, we have to be willing to deal with the full spectrum of what that comes with. That it's going to come with really gross ideas and really dangerous ideas, and that we have to just like try on our own merits to contend with those, you know, like do our best to offer a better counter narrative and a better counter argument and be like, this stuff's going to exist. It's out there. It's popular. People can find it. I'm going to try to state the counter argument really, really clearly and in a way that's entertaining and watchable and like so that we can just try to be better at it. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I've always admired that's something that I feel like you do exceptionally well and interestingly and entertainingly. It's something that I often choose to think about not spending energy into. Well, because it, like, I don't know, it takes all kinds, right? Diversity of tactics. But like I used to be someone who really wanted to dive so deep into quote unquote the other side to like see what the arguments were and to like be able to argue with them. And I think I like found that it like it destroyed my mental health and it made me so unwell. And I realized that I was curating an experience on the internet that was so unpleasant. And I realized that it's not my role in the like virtual community sometimes. Because I think that there's also a thing of like creating virtual spaces that are supportive and welcoming and joyful.
Yes.
For people that might not find that in other places. And I think that is like, that's also a part of the like, you know, the, it's also politically necessary in a different way.
Well, and I don't know if you feel this way, but because I love what you're saying and I completely agree. Do you feel at all? Because I sort of feel that, like, just you existing in the identity that you exist in is, like, enough of a statement, if you want to call it that, that you're, like, just me living my life here and, like, making music and making content and being, like, hi, this is me, is, you know what, do you know what I'm saying? That, like, you're offering that space for other, like, young queer kids who are on the internet and looking and going, oh, hey, this person's like me. And, you know, do you feel like that, that like just being you is you kind of can't get away from being politicized?
Yes and no, mostly yes. I have such a, like, I live in such, I'm such, so embedded in such a queer community that I, like, forget that that might be happening to me.
Right.
Like, the way that people interact with what I create, that I'm, like, I might be a sort of a representation for people in a way that I don't feel in my, like, day-to-day life. Yeah. I don't feel that, like, I don't feel that my existence has to be a political statement.
Yeah.
But I also know that, like, I think about when I was, like, 17, I didn't know a single, or I thought I didn't know a single trans person uh-huh. or queer person. And I can't imagine, like, having... And there, what there just wasn't, there wasn't the same social media landscape. But I do remember when Instagram was and like Instagram stories were like becoming a thing. And I remember following a bunch of like random like trans and queer people in big cities and just like watching their lives on through Instagram and stories and posts and things. And years later, I'm like, wow, that was such an interesting and real like representation of like life and identity that I wanted to have and then that I needed to see in order to like manifest who I am now. And it is so it's so wild for me to be like, I wonder if anyone is like interacting with me and my image and what I create in that way.
I mean, I think it's actually good that you're not, and I see this with your content, that you're not politicizing your identity and you're not making content to be like, my identity is a political statement. You're just being you. But like, mm-hmm. I think that there almost undoubtedly are people who are probably, whether they know it or not, experiencing your right. content that way where they're like, it's important just to see mm-hmm. a trans woman like being herself on the internet. It's important just mm-hmm. to see that and just be like, oh, and she's just making music and making art and that's it. And, you know, like, I think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything other than just exist to have that effect. Just like you said, scrolling internet or Instagram stories and not necessarily knowing that you're like taking it in a certain way, but like subconsciously being mm-hmm. like, oh, it's possible to just be who you are. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Sorry to interrupt
you. No, go ahead. I see you having the light bulb.
I'm a bit of an interrupter. I would also love to hear if you experienced this too, but because a lot of my audience on social media is actually based in the city that I live, mm-hmm. just the nature of what Montreal is like, I do get people that like recognize me on the street sometimes
yeah.
and like come up to say something. And I just, you talking just reminded me of this experience, this like a few months ago where someone like got out of their car and was like, oh my God, like I've been following you for like a year and I like love what you do. And I just came out as trans and like you were very helpful in,
we'll
in
see,
that
Eve.
Experience. And I was like, I just like, I like thought that was so impactful and amazing. And I totally forgot about it until right now.
Cause I mean, I love that you're in a community that's just like that literally like makes you forget that the world is what it is, that you're like, oh yeah,
that's exactly.
I think that's like fantastic. And like, I think one of the things that drew me to you initially was that you seem like you roll in a circle and in a friend group that seems like the friend group that I came up in, that I grew up in.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, right. You just seem like if we were in the same city as 20 somethings, we would have been in the same friend circle. And that,
totally.
Those are a lot of times the people that I gravitate towards. So like, yeah, I know that it can be sometimes in that, in those friend circles, in radical circles, in punk circles, like it can just be like, yeah. Oh yeah, everyone's cool. Like
yeah.
No one's got a problem with, you know, but then, yeah, you go out on the internet and you're like, oh, geez.
Seriously. Seriously. You know? Yeah, I mean, I get trolls all the time for, like, the most basic, like, video that's not political in any way. And, like, people will try to, like, you know.
You made a song out of it, didn't you, out of some of the comments?
I do all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the only way I feel like I can process it and speak back to it in a way that is... that is joyful and disempowering to them and empowering to me.
Yeah, to just kind of show them that you're like still here and ha ha ha, yeah. Great, you know, because that's all you kind of can do. But like I said, yeah, people get uglier and uglier the more layers of marginalization you add to your identity, and they get very bold. They get, I mean, sometimes like my friends who are people of color who are creators, like, will show the comments that they get sometimes, and I'm like, I can't believe that a human in this day and age wrote that and was like, yep, putting that out there in the world. Like, I just, I'm like, oh my God. And it also makes me feel like I need to toughen up about the things that people say about me. I'm just like, I got it. I'm fine. You know, I'm doing fine.
But I mean, it's all bad, you know, like the function of trolling is to try and bully certain people out of virtual spaces, and any experience of it can be very disheartening depending on your like mood and mental well-being, you know. And it's a hard experience for people who don't experience it themselves to like empathize with. Like, I find it, like, some of my friends who like are not creators in social media land, like, don't have this experience, like, it can be hard for them to, it can be hard to have a conversation with them and have the full nuance.
I mean, what I hear from people a lot is, when I talk about this, people who aren't creators or who don't operate in this space, is they'll just be like, you really got to stay out of the comments, man. Like, you just got to stay out of there.
Yeah. And I'm like, don't read it.
And I'm like, if you knew the amount that I do ignore, like, if you knew, like, the volume of comments that I really don't ever see. And it's like the odd comment that finds its way into my eyeballs on a day where I'm in a weird mood, and like that's all it takes is. But I'm like, if you knew the amount that I'm literally not looking at, or the amount of people that I'm blocking, or like the amount of effort I'm putting into not giving this attention, like even just that, the energy that's put into not looking at it or not caring about it. And like you said, I don't think that people can really appreciate it until they've been in that experience of like truly getting hundreds of comments a day, and being like, it's this constant deluge of people commenting on the way I look or the way I sound or my opinions that I shared, or, you know, and I don't have time in my life to see all of it, to see nearly all of it. But so when people are like, just don't pay attention to it, I'm like, oh, I'm not. Like, I'm
this is not pay attention to it.
I'm mostly not. Like, I'm 99% not. But like, there's enough that comes in that I catch it every once in a while. And if it hits me on a weird day, it might like send me into a little bit of a spiral.
Totally. That's part of the nuance in the conversation with people that I think sometimes gets lost too, is sometimes when I share experiences of being trolled, I'm not sharing them because I'm like really upset about it. Sometimes I think it's funny, or sometimes I think it's like a workplace hazard.
Yes.
And it's like annoying, but I'm not like distressed about it. And then other times I'm like, one little comment, like you say, it can like totally ruin my day, or I have to like talk about it in therapy, or I have to like deal with it through self-care or something. You know, like, it really depends.
I have to talk about it in therapy. And like, the people that I talk to about it, like my sponsor, my therapist, will be like, dude, how many times are you going to go back in there? I'm like, I'm trying. But it's I think I talk about it for the same reason, not because I'm trying to complain or say how hard my life is, but just to try to like, it's a new experience for me. Over the last couple of years, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to having this many strangers looking at my face every day and making comments on it. And,
it's a lot for the brain to handle.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, oh, okay, all right. And like trying to constantly tell myself that it's just noise and that it doesn't matter and that it's mostly sad teenage boys who are going to be different people in 10 years, and they're not even going to be that person who wrote that comment. And, you know, so knowing that, but it's like, it's still – I'm still a human. and I'm
absolutely
having this experience. Okay, so – not to bludgeon that dead horse too much of like the goods and bads of being an online creator. What I want to talk about a little bit, and you touched on this earlier, is we're both musicians, yes, and we're both people who make art and have creative projects outside of social media. One of mine is this podcast, and like which I guess is on social media technically, but it's social media adjacent. It's internet.
Yeah.
It's internet content. But like one of the things that I saw as a creative person, once I started gaining an audience, was like this opportunity that didn't exist before, where I saw, oh, I can, mm-hmm, I could use this to hopefully market my projects, my music, totally, because it's like it opens doors that didn't even used to exist in the entertainment industry. It used to be that you had to get a meeting with a big producer or production company, or get a meeting with a label, get represented. Like, you needed to be let in by an elite group of upper echelon people. And if that didn't happen, then you were going to be an indie artist in a local scene, and that was it. And there was really no in between. The internet all of a sudden created this space where like Lil Nas X has 2,500 Instagram followers, hacks the SEO for his song Old Town Road, and like overnight is one of the biggest recording artists in the world, and does it through the internet. And we see this on TikTok a lot, where people are like coming from obscurity, from anywhere in the world, putting a song out and saying, hey, I released this song. Because the other thing that musicians have today that they didn't used to have is we're both sitting in our home studio space, which like every musician has their home rig of like their instruments and their recording equipment and stuff. So we can actually make like pretty decent music from home and then put it on the internet. And like, I've watched so many people do it effectively. And it's another one of those like internally inconsistent things in the algorithm that I'm like, why? Because I think you and I have had a similar experience where it's like, anytime I try to tell my online audience about my music or my podcast, it's like the algorithm is just like, absolutely not.
LOL, no.
It's funny that you thought you could do that. I think it's funny that you thought that we would allow you to. Because I'm like, well, then what? And I mean, is that your experience with trying to market stuff?
Absolutely. At the same time, I do feel like I share some of the quote unquote blame, but it's not, it's a thing I actually haven't quite figured out, because, and maybe you experienced this too, like I feel like I woke up one day and was like, oh, so strange that I've created a platform on like TikTok that is so based around this aspect of my personality that is like fun and joyful and irreverent and comedic.
Yeah.
So that's that. But then the music that I create is really not that at all. Like, it's so emotional, and it's like introspective, and it's contemplative, and it's and like the second album I'm working on, I think bridges that gap a little bit more, but it's still, to me, very different kind of brands, if you want to talk about that. So
I
actually just don't know how to connect those two things, and I find it very, very difficult.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that I've had that exact same thought, that I'm like, I definitely probably have some of the blame to share, in that it's just hard. If you introduce yourself to an audience as one thing, if people get to know you as a funny person who makes skits and funny songs, and like the songs that you do make are funny, and like are you know, and then you're like, oh, but I actually for years have been making much more serious music that you can find, that I would love for you to go and consume. I have like really serious music videos that I like spent a lot of time and effort making, and I would love it if you would go look at that. And it's like it doesn't compute in people's heads. They're like, no, you're a funny person. You're like, that's not what you are. And I think the algorithm is the same way, where they're like, you don't get to have three niches. You don't get to have three or four or five niches. You get to have one, maybe one and a half. Like, you don't, like once we figure out who you are and how we want to show you to people and introduce you to people, like, you can't be all over the place. You can't be like mostly happy, but then sad sometimes, like, or you know what I mean? But it is weird, because it does feel like it's the algorithm. Because when I say like people aren't interested in knowing me as a serious artist. I don't get that. I feel like when I release videos saying, hey, I have a single out or I have an album out and it's my serious music, or if I just release a video of me playing a song that's like a serious song on the guitar, the people who see the video are like, oh, I love this. This is really, really great. And so I'm like, it's not like they're not receptive to it. It just feels like the algorithm is like, no, that's not who you are.
Yes. Yeah, you know? I do think that's a huge part of it, because I think people who make a relationship with a creative person or with an artist actually love to be able to connect with that person in a multitude of ways.
Yeah,
like I think people actually really love following, and I love following people who are really funny, or I get to see their personality on social media. But I also love their art, which is not that, you know, like. That is something I enjoy seeing, and I know that people do, but there's, I don't know, you really just have to like play. We see people who create content, I feel, that somehow bridges that gap super well. And they're like, their song goes viral because they make this video that is like funny and whatever. You made a video about the guy who like played the guitar for the girlfriend and then like then played the song. Do you know what I mean? Do you know the video I'm talking about?
Which one?
That's not enough of a description.
There have been so many.
It doesn't matter. The point is like I do see people that like that seem to be able to do it. But I think it like, I don't know. I feel like there's this a bit of a myth of meritocracy.
Oh, I know what TikTok. I know what you're talking about. The guy that was with his wife, and he was like, this is my song that I released, and the song blew up. It did really well. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
He's like, but this isn't actually the song. This is the song, and then he plays it, and then they dance around.
Yeah.
That was so funny. But
yeah.
But like that kind of overnight success, that kind of viral video that introduces people's music to lots and lots of people, I think is actually so rare. It's not common. And I think it messes with our minds as artists and musicians to be seeing all those videos and to be like, why isn't it happening to me?
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't think it's common. I think it's rare. But like the platform creates this idea that anyone could blow up overnight. Anyone could, there's this meritocracy, but it's not, I don't think that's true.
Well, and don't you also think though a little bit, I mean, I think that you're right. I think that you're absolutely right. But I think also that like, and maybe this is me just trying to figure it out because I don't actually know, but maybe it's like that someone like Eamon, who's the guy in that video playing with his wife, his platform is like the niche, the brand, the character that he's presenting is like a singer-songwriter. That's who he is. That's what he does. And so like if any of his content's going to blow up, it's going to be related to his music. Now, I feel like you and I.
Oops.
I know. But also, I'm like, but you and I do make musical content that does well. But it's usually like joke songs and like,
funny, you know.
But
songs.
I'm like, but a comment that I get on a lot of my joke songs is people are like, "This isn't actually like I actually like this song. Yeah. I like the way it sounds." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's because I actually do this." Like, and it's weird because I'm just like, "Well, put two and two together. Like, why would I be good at this?" And all, and it's also like on my profile, it says right there, it says like all of my songs available right here, like, you know, and I'm also a kind of person, I don't know if you're the same way, I get bored if I do one thing too many times in a row.
Yes.
So when I see people's platform where it's just the same version of the same video over and over and over again, I'm like, how are you not so tired of doing that video or that one character? Like I have to switch it up or you know, and so I definitely am like, yeah, maybe it's just that you and I aren't only coming at TikTok from like, this is what I'm a band or like it's a musical project. That's what it is. When you're coming into this page, you're seeing content related to the musical project that I'm involved in. And that's it. And maybe it's just that it's too many things, but it still is like, I feel like I'm able to get good traction on a lot of my different things, what be it political commentary or a little sketch where I'm playing both characters or a comedic song. It seems like the only place that I'm guaranteed to not do well is if I say, listen to my podcast or listen to my music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you're the same way. You do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I often ask myself, like, wow, have I really, like, did I, like, really mess up in creating what I've created? Should I, like, start again? Should I create a second page? Should I, like, really take a left turn and, like, start producing content that is mostly, like, quote unquote, serious music? But I don't want to do that, you know? Like, I'm also not just a musician, although I feel like I am such a musician that is a huge part of who I am, and it's a bigger part than I feel like what I put out into the world, which is why it's confusing. But I want to be able to do a bunch of things. And also, like, speaking of, like, funny music, I feel like I have such a tense relationship with creating funny songs. My brain tells me this is a way that you can, like, create music, have fun, and, like, share stuff with people, and it might do well. But then part of me is like, I don't want people to think that I'm, like, just a funny musician. I'm not, I'm, like, not trying to become a Weird Al or something.
Right.
I, like, want to, I, the music that I create is not funny, and I don't want it to be funny.
Well,
period.
Right. I mean, I'm, well, and you look at, like,
I find it hard.
We have some examples, like look at the year that Bo Burnham had in 2021 with Inside, and kind of making this anthem for, like, people who make content on the internet and what it's like, the isolationism of it and everything. But also, like, the career that he's had, that we've allowed him and made space for him to enter the world as enter the public eye as a comedian who was making videos on YouTube and then wound up doing, like, stand-up sets, like, doing full-on like stand-up comedy sets with comedic songs. But, like, when he went to go make a movie, he made that movie Eighth Grade. I think everyone was like, oh, great, sure, like, I'm on board. He's not even in it, he just wrote it and directed it. I'm there, like,
totally.
I'm so into it. He wrote a movie about what it's like about, like, from the perspective of, like, a teenage girl in eighth grade. I love it. Like, I'm there, and it's this wonderful movie. It's, like, very heartfelt and beautiful. And then I think Inside is this weird thing where I think Inside is a movie. I don't think it's a stand-up special. I think that Bo Burnham was hired by Netflix to write a stand-up special, but, like, since the pandemic happened, instead he wrote a movie about a person making a stand-up special in a room by themselves.
Totally.
And like, I think that it probably should have been considered as a film for, like, the awards season and all that stuff, because I think it was one of the most, like, impactful films of the year for me.
I agree.
But the ability of a person like that to be not just funny song guy, but we're all like, yeah, he's funny song guy, but also his songs, like, get in my heart
totally
at the same time and get inside totally. And get inside the name of the thing. But like you said, I think that people, when they form a relationship with an artist, they do want to engage with that artist in multiple ways. They are interested, like watching the Haim sisters in Licorice Pizza. And I'm like, I'm totally stoked to watch the Haim sisters act in a movie. Like, I have issues with the age thing in that movie, but where she's 25 and he's supposed to be 15. But I like that band, and I was totally down to, like, watch them do some acting, and I thought Alana Haim did a really great job in that movie. I think that our respective audiences would be totally fine supporting us in multiple things, which is what makes it frustrating. And I don't think we would have to completely rebrand ourselves as, like, just a serious songwriter, or, you know, it just feels like we're living at the whims of an algorithm that we don't control. Yeah. And that, for whatever reason, has deemed that you and I will get to break through as one thing, but not the other. And so I don't want this to sound like I'm throwing a big pity party or anything like that. Because also, like, have you had anything, some good stuff come from this? Like, with artistic projects and like,
oh, 100%. I mean, this is like TikTok, but me, the platform that I've created there, it's not the only reason that this happened, but I am a full-time creative now, and I've been that way since like September 2020.
Hell yes.
And it is a huge part of how I'm able to do that. It's like a bit of a revenue stream, but like also like really interesting artistic like collaborations and opportunities have come from it, which I think is also very cool. And I think it's led to some cool things. I think it's going to lead to some cool things that are like in development. And it's good for me to remember that, like, it's not for me, like, I love creating things for social media most of the time, but it's for me, it's not like the only thing that I want to do. It's like, it's both a means to an end and a thing in and of itself that I enjoy, you know? And I think it's good for me to remember both those things.
Yes, it is. I have to remember that myself, that like, I need to remember that this is supposed to be fun and that I'm, that I make my best work when I'm having fun. And
yes,
that like, that's, you know, that I'm supposed to enjoy this. And my best work is not to mean the work that the most people like, just the work that I like, the work that like,
exactly,
I'm most pleased with. And I've gotten really used to that over the last couple of years of being like, I don't need the audience necessarily to validate whether or not a thing I've made is good, because a lot of times my favorite stuff doesn't do very well. And again, and I just know that it's not necessarily because the audience didn't like it. It's a lot of times just because on that particular day, for whatever reason, the algorithm kind of went, nah, like wasn't seeing what it needed to see to give that thing a ride. And that's fine. But I feel better about what I'm doing when I'm enjoying it. And I should be enjoying it because it's by far the best job I've ever had. Like,
totally.
It beats the hell out of waiting tables. It you know, like, so
absolutely.
It's like, while I see videos like Eamon's, who he posts this video about a song and it gets 8 million views and turns into hundreds of thousands of Spotify streams. And as a musician, I obviously go, I've got over 1 million followers on TikTok. How come I can't get one of my songs to do well like that? How come I can't get, and then it's like, but look, I'm writing jingles for people for money like that. Mm. I'm making money writing music. I've been able to like sell my TikTok albums on Bandcamp for like a decent amount of money over the last.
I love that you do that. I think that's so brilliant.
Sorry. Well, it's just a thing where I'm like, cause everyone's always like Spotify, and I'm like, no, if you want it, you got to go buy it on Bandcamp. Like, cause those are the ones that everyone wants. And so I'm just like, but whether or not it doesn't look like what I think we were taught it needs to look like, well, you're not a touring recording artist. Mm-hmm. You're not getting asked to open for any big acts or anything like that. Like you're definitely not going to be playing any like late night shows or anything like that anytime soon. But it's like, but at the end of the day, if I look at where I was 2 years ago or 3 years ago as an artist versus where I am today, I'm like, oh, no doubt TikTok has been the catalyst to give me a career I didn't know was possible and to make it, just like you, my full-time thing. And did you see Hank Green's video about the problems with monetization on TikTok?
I just watched it last night. And it's like, it's funny. I thought it was super interesting. And, but it is also always funny for me to hear the conversations, because in Canada, we like don't have the creator fund. So it's just like, a completely different, I'm like, yeah, I agree with everything that he said. And like, I think the like idea of content monetization and people not being paid enough is so real, but I'm like, it's also like, it'd be nice to be paid.
I'm not on the creator fund on TikTok because I just didn't find it to be. When I was on it, it felt like my views went way down because they like wanted to pay me less. So I just was like, fine. Right. And I was like, the money wasn't worth it anyway. I just was like, I don't really care. I'm getting opportunities for like jobs.
Yeah.
From brands and from people who want to collaborate and stuff. I'll make that where I make most of my revenue. And
totally.
But I agree with him that I'm like, God, so this year my focus is YouTube because of that video where I'm like, oh, YouTube does like a 50-50 profit share on ads with creators. Like, that can't be beat. Like that's mm-hmm. that's fantastic. And the reality is, like, they don't even have to. When I watched that video, the problem with it at the end of it is I was like, because Hank says, you know, well, we don't have a job without them, but they don't have a platform without us. And I'm like, right, mm-hmm. it is reciprocal. But also, I feel like they have more bargaining power. I just feel like
absolutely
they're like, oh, someone else will take your place gladly. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if you're not mm-hmm. happy with how this is working for you, if you feel like we owe you more money, someone else will gladly fill your slot. And I also am like, is it not working out? Because I'm making more money than I used to make, and I'm doing it being a full-time songwriter and content creator. So, like, what is my beef really? That I'm not making even more money, and that I'm not even more famous? Like, at a certain point, it starts feeling a little petty and a little, like, ungrateful.
I hear that. Yeah. I hear that. But I think the interesting question to ask is, like, both that this isn't just a problem with TikTok. I think the same ecosystem is across other platforms. I think the conversation is interestingly mirrored in musicians about Spotify, about how little you can get paid through getting streams on Spotify
totally.
And whatnot.
Yep.
And like the only way to make money is to be in the highest echelon.
Millions
of success.
Millions of streams. Millions and millions of streams. Yeah.
In order to get something that is really like is decent and good. And right. I feel like that's the thing about like TikTok too. It's like, yes, it's cool that we can make money from it, but I feel like the only way to have it be decent is to be truly exceptional.
Right.
And that is weird. Like, I think people who are mediocre should be able to still make it work. And I feel like that's what's messed up about the situation.
I think, because I agree too, because it's like, well, somebody's making that money. Somebody is. Like there are people who are making the ad revenue money and the like. These are multiple billion-dollar companies: Spotify, YouTube, TikTok. Like, they are making tens of billions of dollars a year, the money's going somewhere. So when I say, like, because I think what I'm more speaking on is like the voice that I hear in my comments sometimes when I talk about this. Not most people agree that it's messed up, but sometimes people will be like, can't you just be happy that you have the following that you have, and I'm like, I am. Like, I want everyone to know, like, I am stoked to have an audience for the stuff that I make. It's all a creative like me ever wants is just somebody to give a shit that I'm making the stuff that I'm making. Somebody who wants to watch it and is getting something out of it, so that I feel like what I'm doing is being put to use somehow, even though art doesn't need necessarily to be consumed in order to be valuable. Like, but as a performer, I've always felt like I need somebody to watch this thing that I'm making, mm-hmm. or to, you know. And so I'm very grateful, and I'm also grateful for the work opportunities that have been presented to me, and the ability to have this be my full-time job, and have it be like working out pretty well. I'm absolutely grateful. But it's kind of like if you worked for a billion-dollar organization and they were giving you, let's say, and this is, I'm not saying that this is what I make, I'm just saying, as like a ball, let's say they're paying you $60,000 a year in health benefits, and everyone's like, well, aren't you glad that you have that? And it's like, of course, it helps me pay my bills, and I have health insurance, and it's fine. But the CEO of my company made $600 million last year, and I'm just wondering if, like, what if they made $300 million and the other $300 million was like redispersed amongst us workers, and they were still so rich, like so rich, but I just maybe made like $150,000 instead of $60,000, and it's not like that crazy to ask for, since I'm providing a lot of value to the company, and like I'm a big reason why the CEO made $600 million last year. Is it really that crazy for me to ask that I get maybe just a slighter, bigger portion of And I don't, you know, but the problem is under a capitalistic society is like, well, how do we actually get that done? Because at the end of the day, like I said, they can just look at us and go, we don't need to pay you jack shit. We don't need to, like, just the fact that we're offering you the platform and the ability to find deals on your own is enough. We're being nice by giving you anything, and you're welcome to go do something else if you want.
Yeah.
You know?
We're paying you in organic reach.
Yeah. And honestly, like, yeah, like, yes, like I am getting paid in organic reach. Like I am.
Yeah.
Like literally.
Yeah.
But it's also like, but, but we know just by the numbers that we are getting the sliveriest of slivers of the pie. And I think it's just more about like what's right, like what's ethically right. And, but we're by no means the only industry in the world that doesn't operate with the best ethics when it comes to sharing profits with the workers.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonder what a worker-owned social media platform could look like.
Oh God, I've been hearing people talk about it, and like just like the ideas of like what actual communism or actual socialism could look like in modern society, and like that's one of the big things that they talk about is just like, you know, democratically owned and ran social media platforms that are just like owned and run by the people who produce the content on them. And I'm like, man, what would that? How would that? Yeah, how would that operate? How?
Yeah, and, big question.
I mean, God, I'm not an app developer and I'm not a tech person, but I'm like, does anyone have any interest in building that and building something like that? And just saying like, and could we, or would there be like some kind of government restriction on that, that they'd say, no, you're not allowed to do that. It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know. I know so little about this world, so little that I'm like, I don't actually feel like I can have a full conversation about it, but I feel like that is some of the promise of some of these like Web3 ideas.
Yeah.
And, but I like, actually, I watched a really long video about it last night, but I don't know enough to, let's circle back on that conversation.
I know, I don't know enough about it either. The decentralization of it. I don't know enough about it either, but I definitely, I don't know. I just, I watched Hank's video and I agreed with everything he said, but at the end of it, I just was like, I don't know what you want any of us to do though. It's insane that we're even having these, like that because we're so shit out of luck on this topic, we just wind up talking to our audience and to each other about it. How weird would it be if, like, in a lot of ways, you know, we are public figures like people on TV, but how weird would it be if like the characters on your TV show every once in a while looked at the camera and they were like, hey, just so you know, we're not getting paid enough. And like the producers and directors and the people at the network are making like a lot more than us. And they're not like, it's weird. It's really weird.
It's weird
that we have this ability to like look at our audience and be like, I know that none of you can do anything about this, but like, I'm not getting paid enough and I'm getting paid like fine, but just respectively with what I'm offering to the people who are, I'm not getting.
Yeah. And it feels weird because so much of like making, like monetizing social media is convincing an audience to contribute to your pay in some way. And like, so it's hard to like, you know, talk to an audience and be like, I'm not getting paid enough. Most of that is because of the corporate environment that I've like accidentally involved myself in, and part of it is because I can't convince you to pay me in some way.
Which is, it is, it's actually, you're so right. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I feel like a big part of what I do to supplement my income, excuse me, as a content creator is going hat in hand to my audience and saying, please help. Please, I know I've already asked you for money this year many, many times, but please consider joining my Patreon if you haven't already. Please consider hitting up my Venmo on my link in my bio and sending me a tip. Please consider going to my Bandcamp and buying one or all of my albums. Please, if you haven't already, if you consume my content on a daily basis. But I'm like, should the onus really be on them to make sure that I get paid? And is that right? And
I don't know.
But it's like almost like appealing to their ethics is a better bet than appealing to the CEO of TikTok's ethics, because at least I trust them to be people like me who, like, mm-hmm. I'm happy to throw creators that I like
totally.
Money, and I'm happy to buy art from people, from independent artists that I like and that I want to support. I'm happy to donate to things that when people need help, when someone I like or someone I'm close with needs help with medical bills, I'm happy to donate. Like, so maybe I feel more comfortable appealing to, like, everyday people's sense of propriety and ethics than I do trying to go to YouTube or Instagram or TikTok headquarters and being like, hey, you're not treating me fairly and me and my friends right. fairly, because they're gonna go, yeah, so what? Like,
yeah. I mean, I do think both are important, and it also is like, you know, if we want a big change, we still need to, like, buy groceries in the meantime, you know? So, like,
right.
But I remember it was such a, like, I found it a really difficult mental roadblock to get over, to start asking people to contribute, to, like, pay me in some way, or like support me. And it took a long time to get used to it, and it was so terrifying in the beginning. I still find it kind of hard, but I think it's also pretty beautiful to realize that once I started asking, it started happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I just needed to put it out there. And there are people with disposable income who are excited to feel a part of the project that they really love to consume. I was reading a book, and it was talking about, like, the rise of the, like, pay what you can internet economy. Yeah. Like, when Bandcamp first started, like, when Radiohead put out their album for Pay What You Can, everyone was like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't gonna work. How are you gonna make any money? And it totally did work. And a lot of times it's not about, like, asking people, like, trying to figure out a way to convince people to pay you. A lot of times it's creating a situation where you allow them to pay you, allow right. people to contribute and feel part of it. And then they will, some will.
Yeah. I always, and I need to do more on my Patreon, and my Patreon patrons who are listening right now. I'm so sorry. I need to do more.
Same.
But I do like to think of them and treat them, in my brain at least, and in the stuff that I post over there, I like to think of them as, like, my investors and my producing totally. Partners. That, like, yeah. they are, like, because they very literally are. It's like, you are my producing partners. You are mm-hmm. helping make all of this happen. Like, you are. So I want to treat you as though your opinion on what's being made is valuable, and your feedback is valuable. And I want to give you my time when I can. When you reach out, when my Patreon patrons reach out, I want to make sure I'm, like, responding and giving them my time and attention, because they are investing. They are part of the producing team of mm-hmm. this whole thing. And I do think that model is cool. I think that model of, like, us helping each other because we can't count on the wealthiest 1% in society to give a shit is cool. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, like, anti-capitalistic, that it's just sort of like,
mm-hmm.
I like that, providing the space of, like, I'm allowing you to be a part of this. I'm allowing you to help, and I'm not selling it in a store where it has a set price and tax. I'm just saying, like, you can come and just be a part of this on your own terms, and mm-hmm. you can leave anytime you want. And I'll be just grateful for whatever you can, whatever you are able to offer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is really beautiful, but, like,
yeah, but
behind all of it, I still am like, God, somehow we got to get these upper ups to just get on board with, because I think it's crazy that YouTube has a 50-50 profit share on ads. I'm just like,
no.
I can't believe that they're doing that. It's sort of like every once in a while you'll hear about a corporation that just seems to be doing it right. Like, I hear all the time about, like, the Costco CEO who makes, like, $500,000 a year so that his employees can all have benefits. And, like, you know, you just hear something like that and you're like, yeah, why would that not be enough? Why would $500,000 a year not be enough to
seriously.
To get by? and to
to get by
and to be like, you know, and that it's, and I don't actually know if that's what that person actually makes. Like, they probably have assets and money in other places and investments that, like, it probably all equals out to like $1.5 million or $2 million a year or something like that. But it's still like, wow, like the idea that every once in a while you see someone at the top going, I think I'm okay if I accept significantly less than what my peers are making who are in similar, you know, C-level positions as me, so that I can have a business where I don't have a ton of turnover in my employees because people like working there and people are happy with, you know, what we're offering. But I think so often the capitalistic mindset in all industries is like, we're going to get the best deal we can get. And if we can get you to do this job for $60,000 instead of $70,000, we're going to get you to do it for $60,000. Like, we're going to get whatever deal helps us and our bottom line, we're going to get. And if you won't do it, we'll find someone who will. And I just think that if we could shift our mindset culturally and to something that where the economy's not about how much can I make, but how many people can be served by this. How many people's lives can be served by this corporation existing, by this company existing? Like, if that's the goal instead of how much can I individually make off of this? And so that's not, I think you and I aren't saying, I want to make more money for me. I think we're just saying, like, I want all creators who are contributing to these companies being what they are to be compensated appropriately and to, you know, and for us to be able to freely and easily utilize our audience on there to, like, to market and promote our art and to say, like, I have a thing that's for sale that everyone, that anyone who would like can go buy. It's so weird that, like, I'm not allowed to do that. And I am. There's always, like, a few thousand people who are aware that they can go buy the thing, and they do, and it's great. But it's so weird that, like, with people who have 100,000 followers or 200,000 followers or 1 million followers or 5 million followers can say, like, hey, I made this thing that's for sale, and like 10,000 people are aware of it, you know? And it's weird that the platform, it's not like that's money out of their pocket. It's not like that takes money from TikTok or from YouTube. It's weird that they wouldn't want us to be able to organically grow that way, you know?
Yeah. And I think they probably have some weird, like, dual incentive of, like, they do want people, they want the best creators on the platform because that they know that that's how people are entertained and that's why people download the app so they can watch it. But at the same time, they're an attention economy application. They only make money the more time people are watching. So if I have this theory of, like, if that's why it's hard to advertise something that takes people away from the application.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, they TikTok does not want people closing the app and opening a different one.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God.
But then you also
see people who are managed to do it, who managed to.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What were you going to say though?
I don't know either. Just the thing about what we want. I mean, I want all creative people to be able to be creative people and create amazing things. I think if anything, the last 2 years has taught us is the role that art and media and quote unquote content, like, plays in our daily life and our daily, like, well-being, our daily, like, ability to make it through the day and to connect with people. And I am terrified. Something that keeps me up at night is thinking about some amazing artists that I know or I don't know that maybe don't have the specific set of, like, attributes or skills to quote unquote make it in our current landscape, but have such vital stuff to say and stuff to create and stuff to share.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want them to be able to do it too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, like I know some amazing musicians who will never be good at social media.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I know some really great artists. Yeah.
It like stresses me out that, like, that they should be able to be successful musicians and not have this like ability to make TikToks, you know.
Not also have to be a full marketing team and a full PR, like, you know, PR team. Yeah. And be a yeah. I know people like that too, who are just so talented, and they will never ever like even want to put energy into creating social media content or anything like totally. That, you know. But it is cool. I mean, I wish that they would sometimes, because I'm like I said, it creates these opportunities that didn't used to exist. And, you know, it's really hard to find an audience in today's world outside of a local scene without like some kind of grind, some kind of hustle, some kind of, you know,
oh, totally.
Like, some kind of thing that you're like really hitting hard. The other aspect of this that I was going to talk to you about briefly that I didn't talk about, that we didn't even touch on, is like, no, you did touch on it. Getting over the discomfort of asking right. for money. 'Cause that's the other thing too, is like about self-promotion is, is how embarrassing it can be, and how,
yeah.
When you first start doing it, I think that's what stops a lot of these people. A lot of these artists who are like never going to yes. try to, is like this idea that being on the internet is embarrassing, that being like a quote unquote influencer or trying to be, it's almost more that trying to be is embarrassing, that like being seen publicly as someone who's like, I'm trying to get popular on the internet. It just is yeah. like, especially when you work in or come up in local artist spaces like you and I have, where everyone's just sort of like, oh, I'm just trying to play house shows for my friends, and I don't really give a shit about that. Like, when you're that person now who's trying to be popular on the internet, it's embarrassing.
Earnest.
And yeah. it can be a little like public humiliation over and over again to be up in front of everyone going, hi everyone, once again, I'm announcing again that I have this thing again that I'm selling, and it's a new one this time, and I would again really appreciate it. And it's like, it is.
This is good. You should write that down. That's funny.
Once again, I am again. I have another macaroni picture that I made, and I again would like it if you would all consider putting it on your fridge. Again, please and thank you. I would love it if, but it is. Yeah, and I think that I just want like my audience to understand that. I want people to understand that. I'm like, I don't like doing that aspect of it. I don't think any of us do. We're doing it because it's the route that we're seeing to potentially having this be our job. Right?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I have had a bunch of conversations with friends and acquaintances who are like trying to start like, or dipping their toes in like social media and trying to like grow a platform. And we always go into the conversation being like, okay, let's talk about like, you know, playing the algorithm and like, you know, technical things about what your videos should look like. And the conversation always actually ends up being about shame and embarrassment and the real emotional like difficulty that a lot of people and myself experience of like putting yourself out there in this way that feels extremely awkward and embarrassing when you first start. And I felt that too, but also I think at some point I just stopped feeling embarrassed about creating things for the internet. It just felt so like, and once I did, it just felt so freeing and fun and joyful. Although I still feel that embarrassment of like trying to get people to listen to a song.
Yeah, so I still strange. Every time I'm telling people about, you know, even that video that I made where I was like about the like how come I can't, that's embarrassing. It feels like I'm being like, I want more people to like, it feels so needy and like whiny, and but I don't know how else. I'm just constantly trying to find new ways to package the message, because it's also part of the gig is like the whole reason I'm doing this is so that I can have a career as an artist. Like, and the only way that works is if I can, like you said, buy groceries and pay bills. But yeah, I've definitely gotten more comfortable with it. I think that getting more of an audience helps with that. Like getting an audience that's not just your friends and family, and getting, you know, like getting people who don't know you personally, who care about what you're doing, who are like invested, helps to not be so embarrassed about it, to be like, no, there's so actually people who give a shit about this. I think I'm mostly embarrassed still these days by like people I went to high school with, or or like my cousins or my aunts and uncles seeing me and being like, what is he doing? And I'm like, don't worry about it. This has nothing to do with you. Like, you don't,
it's just my
to,
weird job.
Yeah, just don't worry about it. Like but yeah, you have to get over that for sure. And
that's so true. I forgot about the whole, like, I used to be so stressed that I feel like the only people listening to my music or that I was able to share art with were like friends and family.
Right.
And I remember being like, oh, I just want to be able to get to a place where that's not the case. And now it is. And it is so much more freeing to be like, I can be friends with people who like don't engage with my music, like as like a fan. I don't need my friends to be fans.
Oh yeah.
You know? And that is really
my liberating. Friends, a lot of my friends that I see regularly and like a lot of my family, like early on, they were really following. They were like excited about like, ooh, what was happening. And they were like watching all the videos, and they long since have been like, okay, bored. Which I love. Yeah. I love that they're like, that they're just like, I want to talk to you on the phone and I want to like hang out with you, but like, I'm not watching your videos. And I'm like, that's fine. Yeah, yeah. I post new videos every single day. It would be insane if you, my best friend from high school, were watching every video that I posted. Like, that would be weird, because like, that's not our relationship. Like, you're not a fan. You're not like, and they are, they're fans in a different way, but like they're fans of like you, the person, doing well. But yeah, I think that it is interesting because early on they were the only people watching my art, and now they're some of the only people in my life who aren't really up to date on what I'm doing, because they're just sort of like, oh, you don't need us to like to be there cheering you on anymore. You've got other people doing that, which is great, and we love that. But now I can just be your friend or your your sibling
support
or
who, you
know, I could just be and I that is cool. It's weird, that little role switch. And it, you know, and it goes back to like, I want to be clear that like I'm grateful for everything that I have as a result of TikTok and social media and stuff. Like, I'm grateful for what it's brought to my life. I'm grateful for the audience that exists now for what I'm doing. And but and that, so that's not, I think, what you and I are talking about today is like, everyone needs to do better. It's just more about like the frustration of trying to commodify your art, trying to put a number value to it, trying to constantly leverage your audience for more and more money, and not being able to just be a pure creator outside of the constrictions of capitalism. Is constriction a word? I don't know.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's the flip side that I don't think people talk about enough, of like, we have this idea that, and you kind of said at the beginning too, of like, there's this idea that we are living in this age of unprecedented access to all these tools to be able to create things and share it with people and like be an artist from our bedrooms. And it's like, I think that is both true and slips way too easily into this idea that therefore it is easy and therefore it is simple and all you have to do is quote unquote do it.
Yep.
And it, like, all those tools are real and they exist and there's all this access, but it also is hard sometimes.
No,
it is extremely hard, and it takes a lot of labor and a lot of work, and there's a lot of questions and unanswered things. And
well, and even if that's also very even if real. You get to a place where you can work relatively quickly, so like if I'm doing like you know work for a brand or something like that, and they want me to write a jingle and make a video and I've honed my skill set to the point where I can do that like in a day, I can do that in like 4 hours, you know, pump out a song and even get it shot, maybe even get it edited in like 5 hours, 5 to 6 hours, like. And if they hear that and they're like, so I'm paying you how much for like 5 hours of work? It's like, it's not about how much work I put on this project. It's about the fact that I spent years getting to the point where I could do it that quickly. Like,
absolutely.
And so you're right. It's not easy. If a person who hadn't spent the amount of time that you and I have doing this sat down and tried to like whip something up on my DAW here, which means digital audio workstation for the listeners at home, it would take them longer than it would take me to do it because I've just been doing it more.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean, I think you're right. It's not easy, and there's a lot of aspects to it. There's so many different balls in the air when you're doing this job. It's not just point and click. I really have come to respect it as like a craft and a true art form.
Mm-hmm.
Even just this content creation game, like there is a craft to it. There is a real art to it to learn and a real process to get down, which is recently I posted a video that my nieces and nephews made for me for my birthday. The reason I loved it, and I think that the reason other people love it, is because like what they did is not easy.
It was a high production,
right? And like content creators
recorded things, they edited it. Wow.
Yep. They wrote the lyrics, they recorded themselves singing the lyrics, they put that in with the track. The bass in there is real. That's my niece actually playing the bass
for
the song. That's like live bass. And then they hit all the comedic beats in the edit, like right on, and came up with like funny puns. So like the reason I was obsessed with it when they showed it to me is I was like, I do this every single day, and I know that what you guys did is not easy. I know that that's not just, there's like a software on your phone that you just drop the video file in, and it just cuts it up for you really nice and cute and adds all so I think people who make videos see that, and they're like, oh my God, these kids like really made a good video. It definitely is. I'm trying to communicate this to people all the time who hire me to do work, that I'm like, I know that it looks lo-fi and homemade and DIY because I'm shooting it on my phone and I'm in my home studio, and like it doesn't look like something that a professional production company made. And that's because it's not. It was made by one person with home instruments. But that, just like you said, it's not easy. Like you're coming to me because I am a person who has built a valuable skill set at this particular form. And, don't forget that, like, I'm still writing, directing, producing, editing, starring in this commercial or whatever it is that you want me to make. So when I'm selling it to you for, like, $4,000, that's a steal. Yeah. That's a crazy deal that I'm giving you. Because, if you went to a production company to have this commercial made for social media, it would cost, like, low-end $25,000. So like,
yeah, absolutely.
But
they're also paying for your brand,
right?
For like to have you in it, to have like our face and our image as part of it. And it's taken me a minute to be like, oh, right, that is worth money. That is worth that's worth being paid for.
It's worth real money.
It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Especially, I mean, if when you consider what companies put into their marketing budget and stuff, it's like, no, you guys. I know you've budgeted for this. I know that you've accounted for this, and it's, but that's also part of it, is just like getting comfortable with asking for what's fair.
Oh, I'm so bad at that.
I'm terrible at it. I give people a quote, and if they say that's too high, I literally instantly am like, okay, what would you do then? Like, what could
totally? And okay, sorry. What do you want?
Especially if I don't have a lot of projects lined up, I'll be like, fine. What would work? And like, there's a certain number below which I probably won't go. Like, if they're like this, I'd be like, okay, that's rude and no thank you. But I'm like pretty, pretty flexible. I try to be firm. I'm like, this is my rate. And then if they're like, no, I'm like, okay, whatever. What? Because I'm also just like, for most of my life, I did this shit for free. So it's hard to switch into the mindset of being like, okay, I need to start assigning value to this and being okay with assigning it value. Well, I think we figured it out and fixed it. So if all the content creators can just come listen to this conversation, then we'll be good to go.
World peace.
How do you feel? Do you feel like we did it?
Yeah, I feel like we hackathoned it.
Yeah.
There's no more issues. Whatever. It was still nice to talk. It's really nice to talk through the stuff, you know. I
really enjoyed talking with you. I think you're lovely, and I love your content, and I love everything you do, and it was really just easy and nice talking with you. Where can people find and follow you and be a part of your things?
You can be a part of my things by my handles everywhere are the same, Eve Parker Finley. TikTok and Instagram is where I tend to hang out virtually the most. But you can also check out my music on Bandcamp and Spotify. Same thing, Eve Parker Finley.
Love that. And we always love when people go to Bandcamp to buy indie artists' music there.
We love it so much.
We love that. this was a lot of fun. We should do it again sometime. Even if we just chatting off the air or working on a project together. I think you're great, and thanks for doing this.
Thanks, you're great too.
Okay. All right, there it is. There it is. She did great, right? And you can hear our mutual struggle that we both share. So thanks to Eve for coming on the show. I hope that we continue to chat, because I actually really, really enjoyed talking with her. I thought she was just lovely. And I told her this on the show, but I do think that she's the kind of person... When I make friends with people on the internet, like Eve, it's usually because they're people who I feel like if we lived in the same town, we would be friends. We would be in the same friend circle. And I felt that about Eve when I saw her first on the internet. And anyway, it was just great to get to chat with her a little bit about what we're doing. And I hope that you found it interesting just listening to us talk about the process and about the ups and downs and the ins and outs of what it is that we're doing. I'm still so remember in the intro when I said, hey, it's 1:40 in the morning and I'm in the studio. That's where it's still that time, right? It's 1:43 now and I'm in my bedroom and I gotta go to, I'm just so tired. I was up at 5 a.m. today to go to this commercial shoot, and I shot a commercial with this guy from TikTok, this big TikToker. And I'm trying to get him on the podcast too. He was great. But I'm just, I'm wiped. And I've been, you know, the album's out. It'll be out this weekend. By the time you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on Thursday, it's out tomorrow, Friday. It'll come out at midnight Pacific Standard Time on Bandcamp. Links in all my bios. And yeah, you know what it is. You know, the podcast and my music, they're all mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. You can hit him up at themarmalademusic.com to mix and master your thing. And if you tell him that I sent you, he'll give you 20% off the first project. So that's a hell of a deal. But yeah, go check out Chris's work on the album. On Now That's What I Call a Bunch of Austin Archer's TikTok Songs, Volume 3, this Friday, February 4th. And thanks again to Eve. Go follow Eve Parker Finley on Instagram and TikTok. And yeah, I'm gonna go to bed now. Okay? Okay. I'm gonna go to sleep. Night night.